Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort, the bed that lets you adjust the mattress firmness to your preference, your sleep number. And by Grands Biscuits. Your Grands Biscuits from the refrigerator are now also available in the freezer, so you can make as many or as few as you need. You can enjoy the home-baked taste of Grands Biscuits tonight. Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown, up just north of here on the edge of the prairie. We had warm weather about a week ago in the 60s, and then it suddenly turned cold. Cold wind blew in on Monday night around midnight. Some snow fell in time for Halloween on Tuesday. There was just a little thin tissue of ice in the sheltered bays out on the lake and some of the little ponds, nothing that stayed around, just a little reminder of what is yet to come. The Heritage Committee of the Lake Wobegon Lutheran Church met here on Thursday night to plan the big lutefisk dinner, which is coming up in December, and they were holding their meeting. Mr. Wongner is the chairman of the Heritage Committee, and he's a big advocate of lutefisk. This is a big deal, and some of the churches around Lake Wobegon Lutheran churches have been creeping forward with their lutefisk dinners. Although it is supposed to be a holiday thing, a lot of them have been creeping forward into even October. And so Mr. Wongner wanted Lake Wobegon Lutheran to think about scheduling theirs earlier than that second week in December, where they've always been before. Clint Bunsen is the chairman of the Heritage Committee, and Mary Tollefson is on there too, and Sina Foss, and they were discussing this on Thursday. Lutefisk is a dish that was brought over from the old country by the ancestors, and it's eaten every year the holidays in their memory. Many people can do without it. Either you eat it or you don't eat it. There is no middle ground with lutefisk. Lutefisk at its best is sort of overcooked fish, and at its worst, it's like a big plate of mucus, and you sit down and do the best with it. And either you are in one camp or the other. Either you are a fisker and you eat your lutefisk, or you are a meatballer and you head straight for the Swedish meatballs at the big lutefisk dinner and you avoid it. And oftentimes the fiskers like to sit next to the meatballers with a big, big helping of lutefisk on their plates, and they like to savor it and make sounds over it and chew with their mouths open. There's a sort of a show-off element to eating lutefisk. There was a year, this would have been about 15 years ago, when Ella Anderson made the lutefisk one year, and it tasted really, really good, and they had her make it the next few years, and actually, it was fricasseed chicken. So a lot of the meatballers came over to the lutefisk side during the Ella Anderson era, and then one year Inga came back to make the lutefisk, and she made real lutefisk. She tended to make hers sort of medium rare, and that was the year that 22 people were taken to the hospital with the dry heaves. And well, we do it every year in honor of the ancestors who came over from the old country with nothing but their ambition and their hopes and just a little handful of English and their big trunks full of all the wrong kinds of clothes. And they came over having survived on this dish, this dried cod, dried with lye and stored and then reconstituted with water, which many Norwegians happily gave up for pot roast when they could afford it. They came over, and the younger generation became American as quick as they could, and the older generation watched them do it and lived in a kind of shadow world. But every year, Christmas, it was a Norwegian Christmas. It was Norwegian food, and it was Norwegian songs, and the old country, the old lost world was resurrected, including this dish that was beloved of the ancestors. It was their manna in the desert, and to some of their descendants
They would much rather eat something directly out of a dumpster than eat lutefisk. Well, they had the meeting on Thursday, and Mr. Wongen was talking about how we ought to move up the date. And Clint said, "I don't care. You decided among yourselves." He said, "I'm going up to the high school to watch girls' volleyball. I promised to Carl Krebsbach that I would be there." Turned cold, as I say, just in time for Halloween on Tuesday, and so a lot of the kids going around trick-or-treating had to put on extra warm clothes, which was easy for the ghosts and for the vampires, not so easy for the princesses, but they all managed to do it and make their way around town. It was a very dark night. It was cloudy and cold, and it was kind of spooky out there, even in this little town. A lot of mothers were scared to have their children go out. They sent cell phones along with them. But cell phone coverage in Lake Wobegon is practically non-existent. So then when they tried to call their children on the cell phones and couldn't get them, it panicked them even more. Marilyn Tollerud had promised her youngest that they could go around unescorted this year. She'd gone around with them last year in a big red fright wig and clown shoes and a clown mask, and they were so embarrassed. So she promised this year they could go alone. And, of course, children never forget a promise that's made to them, and they reminded her of this. So she let them go, but she was so scared, she followed them at a distance, wearing a big black cape for camouflage and sort of ducking down behind trash cans and skulking along the alleys and behind bushes and across the yards. Clarence Munson went off to the Good Shepherd home to help them with their Halloween party. They're bobbing for apples and so forth, which is exciting when you're in your 80s. And so he was there for the evening. Arlene Bunsen was home alone to answer the doorbell. She opened a bottle of red wine, and it was really good. She had a glass, and then she had some more. And she was feeling sort of giddy when the kids started to come around. She was very, very friendly. She threw open the door and she said, "And how are you? And who are you dressed as?" she said. "Have you gotten a lot of candy?" she said. She was smiling more than people are used to seeing her smile. And her eyes were big and bright, which gave her a sort of demonic look. Children sort of shrank back. So she smiled even more. She had put on her lipstick after she'd had a glass of wine, and so her mouth was larger than it usually would be. And kids didn't come around the Bunsen house for a while, especially after they heard her singing on the front porch. "Did you ever think as the hearse goes by that you may be the next to die? They wrap you up in a nice clean sheet, and all goes well for about a week, and then your coffin begins to leak." They heard her singing, and they decided to skip the Bunsen house. This year, the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out, the worms play pinochle on your snow. Well, so nobody was coming to her door. She didn't know why, so she picked up the bag of candy and the wine bottle, and she went out into the night to look for the kiddos and see where they were. She walked, feeling no pain whatsoever, down the street, and who should she see but this figure who was skulking behind the bushes and darting, seeming to follow these children. Well, she knew her duty as a good citizen. She took the wine bottle by the neck, and she crept up behind this pervert who was making its way down, and she took a big swing and missed, and she lost her balance, and she fell, and Marilyn Tollerud caught her, and Arlene looked at her, and she said, "You're awfully strange. You shouldn't be skulking around like that after children." Marilyn said, "You're drunk." Arlene said, "I've had 2 glasses of wine, and where I come from, that's not called drunk." Marilyn said, "Well, I hope you don't go out driving in the condition you are in." Arlene said, "I will drive if I want to. It's none of your call whatsoever, believe me. She went home with her wine bottle. And Clarence found her sleeping on the couch when he got back from the Good Shepherd home. He woke her up. He said, "How was Halloween?" She said, "Marilyn Tollerud is awfully strange. She was following children around in the dark. I think she bears watching. I think we have an obligation to her." They both went to the girls' volleyball tournament there in the high school, which was on Thursday night. They all went down there. Clint Bunsen went because he'd promised Carl Krebsbach he would go. It was a four-team tournament in the big gym, packed with people for girls' volleyball. There was the Lake Wobegon Lady Leonards, and there was Avon, and there was Sacred Heart, and there was Bruton, four teams there. Carl Krebsbach's youngest girl, Kelly, is the big tall girl in the center of the front line of the Lady Leonards, and he's been following this team so closely all year. Lake Wobegon came trotting out onto the court, and the crowd all stood up and gave them a big cheer. The team seemed a little bit embarrassed by this. They went through a few warm-up exercises. They're coached by Leroy, who has never coached volleyball or played volleyball before. So the girls are mainly learning by losing, which is one way to learn. And then the Avon team came out. Oh, gosh, they were killers. They just came dashing out and running around, and they were going through these warm-up moves. It was all choreographed. It was like a ballet about Amazons pounding the cookies out of somebody. They're just big girls in big black uniforms. And our Lady Leonards in their blue and their gold, and they launched in to play their game. There's this beautiful rhythm to girls' volleyball. That serve comes in low and spinning right over the net, and it's caught in the back row, and they lift it up, and it's set up to the killer, and the killer on the team comes high in the air and smashes it over, and it's dug out. They dig it out, and they set it up, and it's smashed again, and back and forth it goes, dig and set up and smash, and dig and set up and smash, back and forth and back and forth. And the girls are all grinning. They're all happy. They love playing this sport. And for people my age, sit and look at this, and we think of the amazing things that politics can do. The Title IX passed in 1972 that brought about equality in athletics between girls and boys. And back in the old time, these girls would have sat in the stands and eaten popcorn and ice cream. And here they were out there having this tremendous, tremendous, intense experience. It was so great to watch them all. And we were proud of our girls. Carl Krebsbach, just on the edge of his seat, his mouth was open, watching his beautiful daughter, Kelly. She's tall, but she hasn't learned how to be a killer yet. So she's sort of self-conscious. They'll set it up for her, this beautiful setup, and she'll go up high, but she won't really smash it. She just sort of tip it over to the other side. She's self-conscious. She doesn't want to look bad, and so she doesn't move naturally, even though her father is up there yelling at her, "Kill them right not down their throats, babes. Come on. Come on, let's win this one here." And they stayed close. Our team stayed close. It was tied 15-15, and then Avon pulled ahead 17-15, and then it was 23-21, and then it was 23-22, and the crowd was on their feet. Lake Wobegon called timeout, and they all came over. These girls, grinning, I got excited. These girls laughing, they're having a great time. Boys do not grin and have a good time playing sports because manliness is at stake. And so they're stoical and they're grim and they're tight-lipped. But these girls were having a great time. There's a difference between Avon, a great team, and our Lady Leonards. Avon, after every point, they didn't pause for a moment. They all gathered in this circle, just a quick little clutch of players all together, and they touched hands, little pat on the butt, and just, okay, here we go. Not one moment for regret or shame or embarrassment on anybody's part. Just right away to the middle, touch, okay, go, team, then, next, point. Lake Wobegon, always a few seconds of regret, of remorse. Oy, what did I do? Oh, I feel so bad. I'm so embarrassed. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do it. Avon, none of that. None of that. They were a well-trained team. They came out of the timeout 23-22, 24-22. Avon served, and Lake Wobegon caught it, and it was set up to Kelly, and she just sort of got turned around somehow, and she smashed it hard, but about 15 feet out of bounds. And the Avon team just erupted from the bench, and they were all bouncing up and down and screaming, and the Lake Wobegon team stood there, this beautiful girl of his, standing there, the glitter of tears in her eyes, her face turned to rubber, this beautiful girl, her anguish, her suffering. Other girls put their arms around her, comforting her in this horrible moment. And Carl Krebsbach stood up, and he was weeping. And Clint Bunsen stood up, and he was crying. He put his arms around Carl. He's never done that before in his life. And Arlene and Clarence, they put their arms around each other to look at this beautiful girl in her moment of anguish, weeping. They walked out into the night, which after all of this tremendous exertion, walk out into a fall night, and the moon is shining, and the trees up there, it's like a cathedral. It's like a sacred, holy place. After all of this noise and emotion, this is what our children do for us. They reach down into our very depths of our souls and make us feel things we never otherwise would feel. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.
Support for this podcast comes from Grand's Biscuits, your Grand's Biscuits. From the refrigerator are now also available in the freezer, so you can make as many or as few as you need. You can enjoy the home-baked taste of Grand's Biscuits tonight.